Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need to update your window treatments with Window Images blinds and shades. We carry vinyl, aluminum, and faux wood blinds, cellular shades, and more. Plus, get them trimmed to width in-store for free. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, welcome back to the show. And yeah, we haven't been fired yet. Week two, others receiving votes. We're back. It's Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated with my colleagues Gene Wojciechowski and Brian Fisher. Week one of the college football season, absolutely massive coming up, guys. I mean, this is as good an opening weekend as I can remember, certainly at the top, with three top 10 games and a lot of other intriguing stuff going on. So let's get that started. I can't wait for it. We are going to pick the games later at the end of this, but we've got some unbelievable storylines to cover first on these games. And we got to start with Texas and Ohio State. And I've got three questions for you all about this game. First of all, Gene, starting with you, what are the realistic expectations for his archness, Arch Manning, as he takes over as the starting quarterback for the number one team in the country?
Nothing too much, Pat. I mean, they're going to want him to split the atom, teach Bevo how to do a TikTok dance, and win a national championship in his first year as a starter. It is ridiculous. I did reach out to someone in that program yesterday, and I asked them the same question you're asking me. What are the realistic expectations? And I was told the expectations really are more of confidence in him, confident that in this 2+ years that he's been in the program, he's learned the system, he's gained the trust and the belief of his teammates, he certainly gained the trust of his head coach, and they don't expect him to bench press this entire team. It's a great team around him. And if you heard Sark, what he had to say at his presser, which I think was perfect. What did he say? Something like, just go be you. And I think that's the perfect advice to Arch Manning going into this. Just go be you and don't worry about all the crazy expectations and the Heisman talk and all the rest of the ridiculousness that's out there right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that he's a Manning, because he at least has some reference point to deal with those expectations. That's the biggest thing for me. And, you know, look, Quinn Ewers threw for 3,400 yards last year, 31 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. I think that could be maybe the minimum bar, you know, especially given that he missed some time last year. And there's 12 quarterbacks last season that threw for 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns. I think that's kind of the borderline in terms of numbers, if you will, for Arch, you know, and I think, yes, the team success will flow out of that. And there is a whole lot of pressure on him, but, you know, he's still capable of performing. And to me, that is kind of the baseline for me in terms of what is expected of him. That's kind of the expectation at this point. And yeah, it's a high bar, especially in your first full year as a starter. But guess what? That's why he's at Texas. That's why he's in this program with Sark. And honestly, you know, I think it's realistic. I mean, you look at what the talent they have coming back. You look at that schedule in particular that the Longhorns are facing. I don't think it's out of the world to say, you know what, 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns. That's kind of what you can kind of pencil in there for Arch.
But Gene, can he split the atom while he's eluding the pass rush? That, I mean, if you can do that, then you've really got my attention. Otherwise, I'm not that impressed.
And grooming Bevo at the same time.
There you go. Absolutely. I expect him to be really, really good. Your points are both valid. I think that, as you said, Gene, that BU is kind of the mantra, and that's fine. But being him can be really exceptional.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to throw it 35, 40 times, I don't believe, with this team. The defense is loaded, so they don't have to, I don't think, outscore a lot of people. The offense, the skill position players are very good. They've got great running backs. They've got very good receivers. We'll see about the offensive line. That's the one question, and that's where I think his mobility is going to help him. Arch can move. He can scoot a little bit. But the thing to me that I like, and I asked Sark this during the summer when I saw him at SEC Media Days. I said the fact that he's been in your system for 2 years, that he has a maturity to him. You can probably take off the training wheels a little bit. He's like, yeah, I think we can open up the playbook. And he doesn't say, again, we're going to just, you know, chuck it all game, every game. But they don't have to hold back, I don't think, in terms of complexity of plays or having him make checks at the line of scrimmage, because he's been around and he has been kind of groomed into this in a way we don't see a lot of times, and something we actually are not seeing. I wanted to make this point with Michigan, the kind of the opposite right now. Bryce Underwood, 2025 number one player in the country. Arch was 2023 number one, is going right into the fire, starting that first game for the Wolverines. He might well be ready. He might be have an absolutely lights out season, but you're also asking a lot of him immediately, which was not asked of Arch Manning. And I think there's a couple of things there. One, Texas had a Quinn Ewers, as Brian noted, for him to sit behind. Michigan doesn't have that. Michigan had nobody at quarterback last year, as we saw. And the other thing is, again, I think the Manning family, Cooper Manning, Arch's dad, was like, you know, go somewhere and learn a little bit before you get thrown in. So this has, I think, been set up for kind of the slow build now to the sprint. We're going to see how Arch does when he starts sprinting. Question number two for this game, Brian, I want to ask you, is Sark under the most pressure of any coach in the country this season?
Absolutely not. It's still James Franklin. I think we detailed a lot of those reasons last week in the first episode. And look, I think that's going to hold true throughout the season. But the thing about Sark is, you know, he's well liked there in the 40 acres. You know, he has the window open for Texas, and that's key for them. You know, this is a multi-year process in terms of building Texas back up from where he took over. You know, first year was 5-7, and they've taken off from there, and the window's open. You know, that's key for Texas, not just in the SEC, but, you know, nationally. This is a program that has been recruiting at an elite level. They've got NIL going at an elite level. They're winning at an elite level. I mean, this is a program that has won gotten to back-to-back conference title games. They won one of them, went to overtime in the other, made the semifinals the last 2 years, and they're the only program in the country that can claim that. You know, the window is open, and I think everybody understands that, especially now with Arch taking over. Is there pressure internally? Yes. Is there pressure for Steve himself? Yeah, absolutely. And I think that can be good, you know, especially in this environment in college football. But the most pressure? No. I think there's still a little bit of a leash there for Sark. And honestly, that probably doubles the pressure there on James Franklin and some of the others that I'm sure we're going to get to and discuss the rest of this episode.
You know, normally the default position, fellas, is Ryan Day at Ohio State, but he's good. and I don't think it's Sark. I think Brian's right. It's James Franklin. And I'd even argue DeBoer at Alabama has more pressure on him than Sark does. But James Franklin, he's been there 12 years now at Penn State. Sark's been at Texas now. This is his fifth season. I mean, it's time for James Franklin to win something that really matters. And he really doesn't have any excuses this year. So I think internally, externally, Franklin is the easy choice on this one. I mean, he is expected to win it all this year. And if he doesn't, if he has another James Franklin moment, it's going to get bad there.
Yeah, you guys are right. I agree with you that James Franklin is the person, clearly, I think, taking the biggest expectations into this year. But he might also have the best team. So we'll see how handling that goes for him. But there is expectation on the 40 acres as well, and that's part of building what Sark has done. I mean, he's been fantastic there for 4 years, and now it's year five, and they are ranked number one, and they do have a Manning at quarterback. So the expectations are ratcheted up. It's certainly not like you've got to win the national title or we're getting rid of you. Nothing like that. Nothing close to that. But this looks like his best team. Looks like, as Brian alluded to, a schedule that, given by SEC standards, is manageable. Get back to that playoff. You get to that semifinal round, and if they do, that's a good season. But there are going to be people say, we need to get past the semifinal. And there's going to be a belief by some that they need to win a national title. He's not under job pressure, but I think the expectations are significant there. Last element I want to bring up of this game in the Horseshoe Saturday at noon. We'll get actually to one other element in a little bit, but that's more sideshow in terms of the two teams involved here. How much do we expect from Ohio State? Both coordinators gone, QB gone, a ton of other talent gone, but they might actually still have the best two players in the country, Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs. Gene, what are you looking for from the Buckeyes?
Might actually have the two best. I don't even think it's an argument there. I think they do have the two best players in the country. And, you know, does anyone expect Ohio State to win it all again? It's even if they were loaded, I would say it's so difficult to win two national championships in a row. There's a reason why it hasn't been done very often. But I do think that there are expectations within that program that, yes, they did lose a lot of guys, but they still have a lot of talent on that roster, fellas. And Julian's saying, you know, we mentioned Arch Manning. I think Sayan's in the same kind of situation. I think he has been asked not to make mistakes and just to make the easy plays, and that he has enough around him that he doesn't have to do everything. And I think if he does that, he'll be fine. And if he does that, I think Ohio State's going to be fine, and they're going to be a contender. And I think we all had them making the playoff, right, in our little preseason picks. So for what that is worth, I think Ohio State still is a playoff team kind of caliber restaurant. I mean, a roster there. And, you know, yeah, Hartline and Patricia, the new coordinators, that gives you a little bit of pause. I think they'll be fine.
There's a big pause for me in terms of Matt Patricia taking over that defense. I mean, Tim Knowles did such a great job, not only building up Ohio State. I mean, you go back to when before he was hired there. I mean, there were some serious questions about them getting stops on third down and the issues on defense really costing them a lot of those trips when they played Michigan or when they were in those big games. And I think he definitely solved that certainly last season in making that national title run. And to me, Matt Patricia, I mean, the last time he coached in college was 2003 as a GA at Syracuse on a team that went 500. Like, this is, you know, we talk about Bill Belichick adjusting to college life. Like, there should be some concerns that this is the direction that Ryan Day went with that defense. And I think there's going to be a little bit of an interesting period there for Matt Patricia to adjust to not just the speed of the game in college football, but everything that is involved with game planning, you know, what happens in execution during the game. Like, that to me is a big concern on top of the offensive line. I think there's some areas of issues that the Buckeyes probably should be concerned, but you're right, Gino. I mean, the talent level there at Ohio State is going to kind of set a minimum bar that at least is going to get you in contention in the Big Ten. And from there, you can kind of leap forward. But this is probably more of a roster and a program that is oriented towards really contending in 2026. Like, this is where you kind of got to take your licks a little bit, and maybe it happens right here in game one against Texas. But this is still a program that is operating at such a high floor that you got to admire what Ryan Day has built while also being a little bit concerned for this 2025 edition and ultimately what they can accomplish.
And to be fair, Gene, there are some playoff caliber restaurants in Columbus. I mean, that short north area, pretty good places to eat. So not just a playoff restaurant roster. I don't have too many concerns about Ohio State. I think they're going to be really good. You know, I think that Penn State is the team to beat in the Big Ten, but I think the Buckeyes are going to be in the next tier with Oregon, maybe with Indiana, maybe with Illinois, maybe with Michigan. We'll see who else kind of steps up there. They do have great talent, as Brian said, that the floor is extremely high there, but the expectation, it's one of those places we want to go to the playoff every single year. We got to see Julian Sayan play in live action. We've got to see Brian Hartline call plays. We've got to see then. Yeah, I think Matt Patricia is going to do fine there with the defense. They lost a lot of good players, especially up front, but secondary is still going to be very salty. And I tell you what, guys, here's a little insider tip for you. Went up and caught a little Buckeye practice a couple of weeks ago. Freshman running back by the name of Bo Jackson.
No
relation, but he can play. He can run. He's very talented, fast, and I think he's going to get on the field as a freshman there. So we're going to pick that game and the other games later. All right, I want to switch to LSU Clemson Saturday night. Death Valley of the Upstate, not Death Valley of the Bayou. Tigers of the ACC, not the Tigers of the SEC hosting this game. Brian Kelly's lost all three of his openers at LSU. Dabo's lost his last two openers. Somebody's got to win one and actually walk out happy after week one. Which coach needs it more, Brian?
It's BK. You know, I think there's no doubt about it. I mean, just the pressure internally, externally down there in Baton Rouge. I mean, he can feel it, and he kind of got that vibe, not just from the Netflix show last year, but certainly from this offseason and the way that the talk has been around the Tigers there. I mean, you know, when you're making Clemson paw prints and putting them around the facilities, like the overemphasis almost on this opener kind of raises an eyebrow to me in terms of Brian Kelly knows he needs to win this game. And honestly, he needs to change the narrative. I mean, the thing about BK right now is, you know, Marcus Freeman, his successor in Notre Dame, has all the momentum right now in terms of being the guy in college football. And he's the one in our SI preview edition, not Brian Kelly. And I think that is notable. Look, LSU still has six more games against ranked teams right now on the schedule. You know, this is a minefield in terms of that SEC slate that LSU still has to navigate. So a lot more pressure, I think, in terms of what has to happen for Brian Kelly, not just to win this game, but at least be competitive. You know, if it comes down to another field goal, if it comes down to the fourth quarter, like that's really when he needs to earn his keep a little bit. And that's been the issues, certainly in these openers for LSU the last couple of years. I don't think there's as much pressure on Dabo just because, you know, look, the other 11 games that he's going to play, he's going to be the favorite there. He can still make the playoff out of the ACC. He can still really have all their goals, you know, moving forward, even if they end up dropping this one. And to me, this is a program at LSU that we know the expectations. You got to win a national title there if you're head coach, or it's a bust. And I think Brian Kelly, he probably, when he signed that 10-year deal, he said, all right, well, you know, I got some time to really build it my way. But there's, we know in the SEC, and we know at a place like LSU, there is no time to build. You got to win now. And I think he's definitely feeling it coming down his neck at this point.
We're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things. I mean, the world's greatest press conference, right? Yeah, BK is my answer too. It just feels like it would mean so much to BK and that program to win this game. And even though it's just the first game, it feels like it would be so devastating if they lost this game. Like they're just completely playing from behind and wearing that narrative like a cinder block on their ankles again to start a season. So to me, they have to solve this opening game curse. And if they do, I think they're off and running. If they don't, that just hangs with them. And what I think they have, what, Florida 2 weeks later after that. So it doesn't get any easier. I definitely think BK has the most pressure on him.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. And both teams should be quite good. I think that's why they're ranked preseason top 10. I still feel like the expectations are a little inflated for Clemson, but at LSU, the expectation is we are every bit as good as Alabama. We're as good as Georgia. We need to be in the playoff. They have maybe the most demanding fan base, I think, in college football. When they lose, they get mad. They don't get depressed. They get mad. And they will not be happy if they lose a fourth straight season opener. Good for them for scheduling good games. But they want to win some of them. So Brian Kelly, yes, it would behoove him to win this one. It's also, I think, going to be a really good quarterback matchup. Garrett Nussmeier against Cade Klubnik, two guys that have been around the block, been very productive. One of them's going to step forward maybe and be like your Heisman front runner after this, unless, of course, Arch is back there splitting atoms while he's throwing touchdown passes. But, Gene, who's under more pressure in this one, Nuss or Klub?
I think it's Nussmeier. You know, he's a guy who came back. He just switched numbers from 13 to number 18. Number 18 at LSU is a big, big deal. I think it's the first quarterback who's worn that number since 03, I think I read. It's meaningful there, and this game is meaningful. And I think Nussmeier has to do more for this team to be successful, and he's certainly done that in the past. But in this particular game, he's dealing with a refurbished, renovated offensive line against a very good Clemson defensive line, and he has to do it on the road. So to me, more is going to be asked of him, and he's going to have to do more and produce more than Klubnik in this game.
And I don't disagree, but I do think there is, you know, significant amount of pressure on Kate Klubnik this season. I mean, you look at his predecessors, you know, they won national titles. They got the team to the chosen land there in Clemson. And I think that's kind of the standard that he's been chasing, and not just the last couple of years, but going into this year in terms of, hey, this is the team that the window is open there for Clemson to win another national title. They've been building towards this. You know, Cage made mention of it quite a few times. Like, you know, he's been a quarterback with a very young team, you know, young wide receivers making mistakes that he's had to deal with, you know, a young offensive line that's finally kind of coming into its own right now. And, you know, this is his third year in the offense. I think there is an expectation for him, both internally and also externally at this point, in terms of, hey, you've got to be a guy that makes it to New York. You've got to be a guy that leads Clemson, not just back to the playoff like they did last year, but actually win a couple games, get to the national title game, get down to Miami. Like there is some a decent amount of pressure, I think, there, you know, especially given all the talk, you know, last year in terms of Lenore Sellers being the guy in that state was the guy that had all the hype coming out kind of until we got into this preseason kind of time in terms of college football looking at Clemson and saying, hey, you know what? These guys are actually pretty good. You know, that not only can they win the ACC, but this is a national title contender. And I think there's some significant pressure there on Cade Klubnik as well. Even though I think you know, Garrett Nussmeier, in terms of just this matchup, is probably the guy that is facing it.
Yeah, that is the Gene pointed out. The defensive front is nasty from Clemson, and that is a rebuilt LSU offensive line. So, Garrett Nussmeier, good luck out there.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's hit a couple more games. I had another item in here about another week one game that intrigues you. We're tossing that out. This is live podcasting. We, you know, you got to adjust. You got to go off script on occasion. We're making an audible there. But we are going to hit Notre Dame-Miami because how could you not? Huge game Sunday night, Miami Gardens. The Irish are favored. I would assert that the pressure is all on Miami. And I would also assert that this is a huge credibility weekend for the ACC. Combo platter those two points there, Brian. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is what Mario Cristobal has been building towards in terms of getting the program back to not just to, you know, the internal standards there at Miami in terms of competing for conference titles and getting into the playoff and all that. But like they've invested a lot in this roster. You know, they made a big bet in terms of Carson Beck being not only the guy at quarterback, but being back to kind of the first round type of quarterback that, you know, he's expected to be. And honestly, this is a big moment for the program. And I mean, I think you can probably go back when Mark Richt had them rolling, you know, and they went into some of those late season games. I think it was against Pitt and there was a lot of expectation going into that game and they ended up not meeting it. And, you know, their season kind of went from the wayside from there and kind of a big moment for for the Canes themselves to prove not only are they back in college football, but they are, you know, to be taken seriously. And look, you know, it's not like saying that Notre Dame has it easy coming off that national title game appearance. I think there's, you know, a lot of expectations around what Marcus Freeman has been building. This is a team that, look at it, you know, in terms of having a great secondary, in terms of having a good offensive line again. Yes, there's a question at quarterback and if CJ Carr can be the guy to lead this program back to the playoff. But this is a lot going on, riding on Miami to not only get back to what they expect to be, but kind of have that swagger a little bit. You know, I think that they did not have that the last couple of years. And I think there's kind of the expectation, there's the feel around this program that is a little bit different coming into the year than there has been in years past. And we'll see. You know, I think this is a terrific matchup. This might be one of the closest games that I can remember in terms of, you know what, you can make a case either way, half a dozen ways in terms of either team winning this one. And I think it does with that primetime spotlight on Sunday, there's going to be a lot of narratives and a lot of talk coming out of this one in particular.
Yeah, I'll Xerox everything that Brian said. And as far as ACC credibility, Pat, I'm disappointed you didn't mention the Kennesaw State at Wake Forest game in that
huge
equation.
Huge.
If the ACC wants to get multiple teams in this playoff, a weekend like this is really important. I mean, it would go a long way if Miami beat Notre Dame. And if Florida State fans didn't need a barf bag against Alabama, and Clemson beats LSU, and we can go down the list of the important games in that conference this week, but it is important from a national perspective, and you know those committee members certainly are looking at things as we are too. So just from respectability perspective, it's a big deal. And these are big games, and they provide a sort of a baseline now for, okay, the ACC might be pretty damn good this year. And they showed it this first weekend.
Yeah, you know, I love the way the ACC schedules this first weekend. They've kind of taken it as their showcase. You know, they play Thursday through Monday. They're always willing to play that Labor Day game, which we're going to get to in a second. They'll play on Sunday. They'll take on, you know, other teams from power conferences. We mentioned, obviously, LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami, Florida State, Alabama, Georgia Tech on the road against Colorado.
Yeah.
South Carolina, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, mm-hmm. Tennessee. So a lot of good opportunities. The problem is you got to win some of them.
Yeah.
We'll see if they do. I think they can. I think they've got some teams that are ready to rise up maybe and show a little something this weekend. But The Miami game in particular jumps out to me because it is a home game, and you've got a Notre Dame team that played in the national championship, comes in with a bit of a target on them. And so if you're the Hurricanes, if you are going to get back to being the U, you need the W here in that one. All right, the other ACC game of note, the Labor Day night game of note. Did you guys know that Bill Belichick's coaching in college football? I don't know whether that came across your radar at all, but he's the head coach for the North Carolina Tar Heels. And they open against TCU. To me, this is an unprecedented coaching situation. We've never had somebody of his caliber with no college coaching experience come down to this level. And I cannot wait to see what is going to happen. So we'll bookend this segment with what I asked about Arch. What are the realistic expectations for Chapel Bill and North Carolina this year, Brian?
Now, in the last 25 years, North Carolina has won at least 5 ACC games 7 times. I think that is the minimum in terms of expectations for Bill Belichick. And look, they've got the schedule to do at least that. You know, after their bye when they play Clemson, they got at Cal, Virginia, at Syracuse, Stanford, and Wake. They should be favored in all 5 of those games. And you're talking about kind of the minimum bar. That's kind of where I set it for Bill Belichick there. I think the roster has probably improved from last season. Look, it wasn't a great year. And the thing about Bill Belichick is he is so good at that week game planning that, you know, really has been the difference in terms of his NFL career. You know, he was so good at making, you know, your weakness his strength, taking away what you did best, you know, from each week. And I think that's going to unfortunately give him the schematic advantage here in the college level. We'll see how he adapts to, you know, kind of the nature of college football, because he can't count on execution anymore. Like, that was a hallmark of those Patriots teams in terms of execution from week in to week out. I don't think he can count on that, not just with a new team here and there in Chapel Hill, but honestly, the fact that he's coaching 18 to 25 year olds, he better count on expecting the unexpected in college football. And that'll be an interesting thing to see him adapt to. But, you know, this is frankly not a sport, you know, where you can assume execution on things. And so at the same time, like, it's not crazy to think, you go down that schedule and think, all right, you got Bill Belichick, you got some coordinators who know what they're doing at the college level. All right, 9-3 is not like out of the question. And it's crazy to think about that. I don't think they will necessarily reach 9-3, but in terms of expectations, like, you know, you bring in Bill Belichick and you're paying him $10 million a year, like you expect some results. And we'll see if the roster is up to par. But I expect some meaningful progress there in Chapel Hill, because honestly, you bring the best coach in NFL history into college environment, you better expect some decent results.
Pat, I'm going to give you credit for that Chapel Bill line. You didn't give me any credit for the Brian Kelly imitation earlier.
It was so good. It was good. I'm sorry.
Just going to say that. Yeah, I think 8 wins is entirely reasonable. And as Brian said, if you look at that schedule, it looks like an Indiana non-conference schedule. It's pretty easy. And if Carolina can just play decent football, I think they fall into 6-7 wins, and then maybe they get to 8. And, you know, 9 I think would be pushing it a bit. But, yeah, Belichick is there for a reason. And you can't tell me the other coaches in that conference aren't wondering what sort of difference he's going to make. He's going to make a huge difference, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And Carolina does have a decent roster, and they were active during the offseason, and they brought in some good players. So I think a combination of that schedule and what Belichick brings to the table, you know, eight wins isn't unreasonable to me at all.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm going to set the bar at 8 and see if maybe they can nudge over it. I thought they picked up a good quarterback in Gio Lopez from South Alabama, who was pretty much handpicked by Chapel Bill to be his guy. I feel a little bad for Sonny Dykes. This is the second time in 3 seasons he's had to be the foil in the most anticipated opener of the first week. If you remember, it was his TCU Horned Frogs who played Deion Sanders in his first game at Colorado. They lost that one. Hate to tell you, Frogs and Sonny, I think you're going to lose this one too, but I am fascinated. We just don't know what we're going to see from North Carolina, but I do expect a really buttoned up semi-professional operation. I think with that will come great scouting, great game plan, and we'll see about the execution, because you are dealing with younger players who are not as good as the Tom Brady group that he coached for a long time in the NFL. But what a weekend that we're going to end up with that. After everything that's going to happen on Saturday and Sunday, we then get Bill Belichick on Monday. My gosh, we're lucky.
Pat, you mentioned Brady. I'm kicking myself. I wanted to look at Carolina's roster just for the fun of it to see if there was any kid on that roster named Brady.
I don't know. I didn't check either.
I'm doing it for the next show.
All right, we'll be ready. We'll be better next week. I can promise the podcast listeners. All right, new topic here. damn it. I'm already disappointed, a little bit let down. I thought we had a fantastic, juicy topic about Dave Portnoy versus Ohio State, and it looks like it may be a little bit overblown. Ross Dellinger, Killjoy from Yahoo Sports, reports that Ohio State did not issue a ban on Dave Portnoy, AD Ross Bjork says. Bjork confirmed that Fox decided Portnoy would not be on the main desk of Big Noon Kickoff, and those not on the desk do not normally appear on the field. These are Fox decisions, he emphasized. If you hadn't heard, Dave Portnoy, Barstool Loudmouth, is going to be part of the Big Noon Kickoff pregame show this year. He's also a massive Michigan honk. And the battle from within now in the Big Ten of having a Michigan honk, you know, trolling everybody else in the league, especially Ohio State, presented a juicy little sidebar, especially with this game here at Ohio State. But I will say this, guys, nobody's going to watch Big Noon Kickoff this week anyway, because it's Lee Corso's last game on game day. So, I mean, unless Portnoy is going to go out and plant a flag like Michigan did last year in the horseshoe and start a brawl, I don't think it matters too much. But anyway, guys, what do you think of having a Gene, especially given your history as a morning show guy here, what do you think of having somebody who's as far outside the box as Dave Portnoy involved in a pregame show?
Well, Pat, obviously I would have been devastated had they barred Portnoy. I don't know how my life would have gone on at that point. I don't care. I mean, honestly, I don't care what Dave Portnoy has to say about college football, and he probably doesn't care what I have to say about it either. But, you know, had he been banned, Fox would have been doing a dance in the streets. I mean, everybody would have been tuning in for the drama and the controversy of what's Portnoy going to say. I don't care. To me, this weekend is all about Lee Corso, and he deserves the entire spotlight, and a sliver shouldn't be wasted on Dave Portnoy this Saturday. This is a tribute time to Lee Corso and a remarkable body of work and career, and a tribute to him on College Game Day. So, yes, I worked on College Game Day for a long time, but I would say this had I never worked on the show. If I worked for Fox, I'd still say it. This is a Saturday meant for Lee Corso and not the silliness of Dave Portnoy and whatever drama there might have been with Ohio State.
Not to go conspiracy theorist here, but I think the Fox executives like that the storyline is out there to remind everybody that, hey, Big Noon Kickoff is also going to the biggest game of the weekend, and it's on Fox's air, because there has been so much oxygen, I think, that's been sucked up by the fact that this is Lee Corso's last show. Like, I would imagine that crowd size wise, you know, there's going to be a few photos floating around of some disparities there between the folks around the game day set and the folks around the Big Noon set. I don't think it's going to be too stark, but I think there's going to be quite a difference in terms of if you're an Ohio State fan and you got tickets to go to the shoe there, you're probably making a beeline there to see Lee Corso's show, even if you might not be able to hear necessarily everything that's going on set there or see it. At least you want a glimpse of seeing Lee, you know, put on that mascot head one last time. And I think it's going to make a big difference there for a lot of folks. And to me, you throw in the added layer of the fact that, you know, Fox is in a bit of a carriage battle with YouTube TV nowadays. I mean, you know, they just launched their streaming service. You know, if there's any way you could get additional attention on the fact that you have Big Noon Kickoff and the fact that it is a Fox show, and the fact that, you know what, if you can't even watch the game, here's a way to subscribe and juice our subscriber numbers in the first couple of weeks of this streaming service. Hey, this is a probably tailor-made situation for the Fox executives there. But I think there's no doubt in my mind that this is one of those stories that it really says, hey, let's kick off the dang games, because this is something that I don't think anybody really wants to discuss, the fact that Dave Portnoy, whether he's inside or outside of the horseshoe this weekend.
I'm glad you brought up the YouTube Fox situation, Brian, because I will just say this. By 11:59 a.m. on Saturday Eastern time, if they don't have that thing figured out and they black out Ohio State, Texas for any part of the country, I may get violent. It'll be I'm a YouTube subscriber. So,
well, Fox desperately wants this to be the most watched game of the year, like bar none. You know, they want those top two slots in terms of this game in Ohio State, Michigan at the end of the year. They want to say when you have those lists at the end of the year where the highest rated games, they want to make sure that Fox is 1-2 in those standings. And I think they will make out a deal with YouTube TV at some point, or, you know, because we know deadlines spur action in a lot of these cases, or, you know, they might agree to a good faith extension a little bit for over the weekend, because they don't want a million or 2 million subscribers not to be able to watch this game. I think there's no doubt in my mind that they want this to be the most watched game of the year, especially initially on that week one, which has some pretty big primetime matchups as well.
Well, I know this. There's nothing fans get more angry about, and I include myself in this, than these idiotic carriage disputes where you get held hostage up till the last minute or sometimes past it. So
yeah.
Figure it out, Fox and YouTube. Figure it out. All right, that's going to lead into our rant section. Week zero was absurd. We've got to cover a little bit of it. Kent, can you please play the BK Memorial rant intro to get us going?
I'm going f***ing in. Is that clear? If you guys want to go half speed, let me know now. You're wasting my time. Get your asses going.
Gene, get our asses going. What are you ranting about today?
We needed BK at Fumblegeddon in Dublin. I don't know. Did you see the field? There were no lines on the field, no yard lines. It's as if they gave the field folks a pint of paint and a Q-tip and said, go ahead, paint the field with this. You couldn't see anything. So if we're going to go across the pond again and do these games, let's at least get the field right. It's a small thing, but it sure is helpful to know what yard line they're on. And a quickie pat on the back. I think all those involved on that ESPN documentary that aired on Lee Corso a few nights ago did an extraordinary job. It was a wonderful piece of work and a wonderful tribute to Coach.
And not bad. That was certainly got a little dusty, and I think it'll get a little dusty for a lot of folks on Saturday to say goodbye to LC. I am ranting against this fake injury rule. You know, I think we knew it was coming, but I think the reality there in week zero kind of became apparent to a lot of us. You know, in terms of if a player gets injured after the ball is spotted, they'll charge a timeout to the team where the player fell down, and this, you know, this impacted Iowa State there in Dublin. Impacted Hawaii on offense, actually, on you know, in that game against Stanford. And I think this is kind of the concern over this rule being put in place, is saying, hey, look, some guys are going to have legitimate injuries that they're going to happen after the ball gets spotted. And I know the meaning behind this rule change was nice. You know, everybody kind of wanted it. Everybody wanted to prevent fake injury somehow. But the execution of this rule has so far, just in the limited sample size of week zero, probably raised it on a lot of radars in terms of coaches, hey, making this going to make it a coaching point. I think during practice, like, look, if you're hurt, go down right away, go down immediately, even if you're concerned a little bit, because it's going to cost a timeout. And look, you know, you talk about Kansas State driving at the end of the year, you know, not having a timeout there. You know what? That's concerning. You know, if you're in the 2-minute offense, if you're having, you know, issues down the stretch, you're trying to mount a comeback, you have one last timeout. Because some guy fell down, you know, a little bit late after they spotted the ball, it could have a serious impact in terms of who wins or loses these games. And I think that, to me, is the biggest talking point coming out of week zero for in terms of the kind of the broader actual on-field issues in college football. This is going to get somebody. And I'm probably a little worried going into week one, because the worst case, it slows down games a little bit more. The really, truly worst case is that it ends up costing a team because they don't have a timeout. They end up, you know, not being able to get the field goal team on at the end of the game. Like this could have a pretty big, wide ranging impact if we're not careful.
Yeah, I can't get my ire up too much about that. They'll figure it out. They'll get better with it. I think week zero, yes, there were a couple issues, but I think the officials will adjust, the coaches will adjust, everyone will adjust and figure that out. But Gene, your point about the yard lines in Dublin. I think it was at halftime. They had somebody out there with, like, it looked like Air Academy High School in the 1980s, where they're pushing one of those little like chalk dispenser things.
Yeah,
like is that really all we can do here? Can we please?
Field ops needed some help there.
Yeah. Exactly. That was brilliant. Two things I got to bring up from week zero. First of all, glory hallelujah, and this is so college football it hurts, our Japanese YouTube Morton Steakhouse kicker who won the game for Hawaii against Stanford, Kansei Matsuzawa, who did not know how to kick but came to America, saw the NFL, said, I'd kind of like to try, learned from YouTube videos, got a position kicking at Hocking College, junior college in Nelsonville, Ohio, somewhere out there in the southeast corner of the state, got good enough at it and learned English, by the way, while he was there, and then ended up at Hawaii and pretty good kicker, makes the winning kick for them to beat Stanford. And oh my God, how bad was Frank Reich in his return to coaching at Stanford? Holy moly. If Stanford wins a game this year right now, I would be pleasantly surprised. They have got a lot of work to do. And then also, look, hey, I feel for Avery Johnson, the quarterback at Kansas State. I'm sure it was a mortifying experience to hear what happened when your father fought your brother in a puddle in the parking lot after the game in Ireland. But it's kind of an Irish thing, I think. You know, it's like something out of a James Joyce novel. A father takes on his son and, you know, they get out the their aggressions and retributions and that sort of thing. Let's not do that again, though. Family,
please.
They issued an apology. Mark Johnson and Anthony Johnson. Maybe they should stay home. Let's ground them for the home opener for Kansas State, and they can show up with better behavior after that. All right, guys, because we have bad show karma, two significant news items broke last week, like right after we taped. We're hoping our karma gets better, but right now, not great. First of all, the SEC voted to go to a 9-game schedule for 2026. We talked about 8 versus 9. They're going to do 9. What really does this mean, and what does it mean for even this year's playoff? Brian, what do you think?
Not a whole lot in terms of this year, but I think it does kind of take one of those talking points that was used against the SEC, especially by the Big Ten, you know, off the table. You know, how many times have we heard this 8 versus 9 discussion in terms of being it being used against the SEC? Like, oh, they only play 8 games. Like, well, all right, well, now they've taken that off the table. So I think that's kind of the bigger picture thing in terms of making this decision for 2026. But, you know, at the end of the day, look, this is not necessarily all about the playoff. This is not necessarily all about getting extra bids or kind of changing the calculus in terms of what the format might be for 2026. At the end of the day, this was about money. You know, if ESPN is not putting more money on the table for the SEC, I don't necessarily think that this ends up happening. And I think on top of, you know, getting $4 or $5 million in terms of each game for each team at this point, you know, look, this is, you know, about SEC schedules as well. You know, like, athletic directors, they got to sell more tickets nowadays. They got to sell them at ever higher prices. They got to get people in the gates. And frankly, playing those group of five games, not only are you paying $1.5 million, $2 million for a lot of those buy games, but you're not getting the concession prices that you're getting for a normal game. You know, you're not getting the ticket premiums that you would normally get. You're not getting fans to stay as long as you would hope. And so I think there's kind of the secondary effects of this college football ecosystem that had an impact on this decision that is, you know, really drove the SEC to do this. And at the end of the day, still, it was about money and not necessarily about the college football playoff and what it means there. I do think it was notable that they make this tweak as soon as the committee announces those changes to all right, we're going to reward strength of record. We're going to make some changes in terms of the metrics presented to the committee. But yeah, at the end of the day, this was a money decision. It was not necessarily focused all on the college football playoff in my mind.
Well, I'll sort of semi disagree with you. I do think a lot of the playoff did figure into this equation. Yes, always follow the money. I think Kirk Cignetti's going to have to find another conference to crack wise about now. And I do like that not only did they go to 9 games, but didn't they also say you have to play an upgraded opponent in that other game? So I like that component of it. What does it mean as far as the playoff? Well, I think the logical conventional wisdom is they're going to go to 16 teams and go to a 5-11 format. Is that for sure? No, nobody really knows for sure now. But as far as this year, and Pat, you wrote about it in the Dash, and you can explain it better than anybody. I do think it does have some sort of impact on this season too.
Yeah, I think so as well, because I think now that the SEC has basically said, okay, we need to go to 9, then there's a problem with 8. And so now you're saying, okay, we have one more season with one fewer game and people are going to club us over the head with that. And
yeah,
we realize that's an issue, so we're going to change it. We'll see about that. I think we're going to have more rhetoric and lobbying this year about the playoff than we ever had. A lot of it starting with strength of schedule. And if you thought there was a lot last year, get ready for more. All right, one other topic that eluded us last week due to bad show karma. Pat Fitzgerald settled his lawsuit with Northwestern. He had had a lot of great years there, was forced out amid a hazing investigation that involved players in his program. I think we all expect Fitz to be back coaching in college. Gino, how attractive a candidate is he, and which currently employed coach should be nervous that Fitz is coming for their job?
Well, let's see. He was Big Ten Coach of the Year. He won 10 games three different times. He won 8 games, I think, 6 times during his tenure there, and he did it at Northwestern. So is he an attractive candidate? Absolutely. He's been cleared of wrongdoing. They wrote him a very sizable check, I'm sure. They issued an apology statement. He's in the clear. I went through the teams that I think will be attractive to him. I don't think it's going to be the other way around. He doesn't need the money. He's going to be picky. So I'm going to, for the moment, I'm going to set aside the possible Big Ten teams that he could maybe go to and concentrate on 3. 1, if Kentucky was dumb enough to get rid of Mike Stoops, I think if he were ever going to parachute in the SEC, that might be the one program that isn't insane that he would be able to handle in a city that's big enough for him and close enough to Chicago for him and has the resources to win games there. 2, Stanford, which has done everything it could to destroy its football program, now seems to be coming around the other way. The administration is supporting it. They hired Donahoe from the former Nike executive, and they have Andrew Luck there. And I think that would appeal to somebody like Fitzgerald. He wouldn't be scared of the academic component of Stanford. And this is crazy. Just bear with me. But if Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame does as well as we all think it's going to do this year, and an NFL team makes an offer that he simply can't refuse, I think that'd be a great landing spot for Fitzgerald too. So not that Freeman's looking over his shoulder. It's just that if he left, I think Notre Dame would be silly not to consider someone like Fitzgerald.
That's a juicy one.
You know, as soon as you mentioned it, Stanford comes to mind, you know, in terms of the similarities there with Northwestern, you know, having a new regime taking over. And look, that's a program that's not only unique in terms of getting guys in there, but it's going to have to be a developmental program. This is not a team that can change over the roster through the transfer portal, you know, every other year. Like this is something that is in his wheelhouse. I don't think he would be necessarily afraid of doing things, and he could probably pull Stanford a little bit into the future in terms of how you got to run a modern program. You know, I think there is that aspect that you know, cannot be overruled. I think if you do go in the Big Ten, though, you know, Maryland, where he was a GA initially, would kind of fit the bill too in terms of, hey, we also have to do a little bit of development, but there's new AD there. There's a little bit of pressure on Mike Locksley, not necessarily to run him out of town, but if he really bottoms out this year, you know, you could definitely see Maryland making a change. And the other thing that came to mind too is Cincinnati. They're, you know, kind of similar part of the country, still in the Midwest, but a team that has, you know, been to the playoff before. Saw them have success under a guy who's kind of similar in Luke Fickle. And that, to me, you know, I think there's some pressure on Scott Satterfield to kind of get over the hump this year, but that would kind of fit in terms of ticking a lot of boxes. He could lean in those connections in that Chicagoland area if he's there at Cincinnati. And that kind of came to mind as well.
See, this is why I have you guys on the show. Actual good insight, good thoughts, some good scenarios there. The Exxon Valdez is pointed in the right direction.
What about you,
listeners? I've got a couple scenarios for you. First of all, I love the Stanford fit for Fitz. I'm intrigued by the Notre Dame fit if Marcus Freeman does go to the NFL. Here's my scenario. Luke Fickle, year 3 at Wisconsin. It's just not working. Cincinnati has an opening. He can go back to his happy place at Cincinnati, and Fitz can just roll right up into southern Wisconsin and take over the Badgers.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I mean, I wouldn't put it out, the fact that he could go to the NFL for another year to just if the right job is not open. And you mentioned Wisconsin. I don't necessarily think with that buyout that, you know, Luke Fickle has, that it could come open this offseason. But you talk about next year. Yeah, you know, it definitely could. So maybe it's a wait and see situation. I wouldn't be surprised at all, you know, given Fitz, if he kind of dabbles in the NFL just to kind of have a way stop, if you will, in terms of actually getting back into a college job.
Maybe not need the buyout at Wisconsin if Fickell moves on his own to Cincinnati. We'll see. All right, winners and steak dinners. Let's get our picks out there for the week. I nailed Iowa State in the Farmageddon game. Thank you very much. Stick with me. I'll make you all lots of money. Now let's go. We got to pick some of these unbelievable games we've been talking about. We're going to do four picks and then give me your lock of the week. We're going to have to do them quickly. We don't need to get into the minutiae of, you know, which left tackle is matched up against which rush end, because that's not what this show does. Just give us some winners against the spread. Texas at Ohio State, noon Saturday on Fox. Buckeyes giving 1.5. Gino, which side are you on here?
Oh, please, give me the 1.5. I'll take Texas. Revenge game for Texas. And I just think they have a little more talent than Ohio State does.
Same. I'm going with Texas in this one. And I think it's the offensive line to me is the biggest question mark, you know, around Ohio State. Can Julian Sain have enough time to throw it downfield to Jeremiah Smith? With that Texas front seven, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I love the Longhorns here. I'm surprised they're not favored, but I think they can win. They might even win easily. We'll see. Okay, Saturday night, Death Valley, LSU at Clemson, 7:30 p.m. Clemson is laying 4. Brian, who are you going with?
I'm going with the Tigers, of course. You know, I think that's easy to say, but I'll go with Clemson at home. You know, I think the experience there, and you know, Gino mentioned it earlier. I mean, the rebuilt offensive line. I know Brian Kelly has said, you know, hey, I really like this group, but it's a different thing when you're going against, you know, Parker and Woods and that, you know, a couple first round draft picks there for Clemson. So I will go with the Tigers at home.
It feels like a sucker bet in a way. Like they want you to take LSU in the points. And guess what? I'm a big sucker then. I'll take LSU in the points. And I'm going to, in Brad Davis, I trust, and he's going to figure out a way to let that offensive line hold up against Clemson's D-line.
There you go. I'm going to be a sucker with you. I'm going with LSU here, getting the points. My friend of mine who gambled, I really never have, but he said in terms of sports betting, horse racing, yes, sports betting, no. See the trap, recognize the trap, turn the trap to your advantage. I'm walking straight into the trap. I'm taking LSU in the points, which clearly Vegas wants me to do. We'll see how regretful I am come late Saturday night. All right, Notre Dame, Miami, 7:30 Sunday night on ABC. Notre Dame is giving 2.5. Gino, where are you going?
By the way, I picked Iowa State too. All right, so okay. You're not the only guy who took them. Right. And I'm going to take the home dog in this one. I'll take the 2.5, and I'm betting on Carson Beck. It's really that simple.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is more of a Big 12 type of coin flip game. You know, I really don't know which way to lean, but I will go with the home team there. And I do think there's some faith there in Coral Gables in terms of Carson Beck being the guy that we kind of saw 2 years ago with Georgia. I think that we'll see that addition there on Sunday before Labor Day.
I'm going to take the Irish. I think the program's just in a little better place. I think at the line of scrimmage, they're going to be better probably on both sides of the ball here against the Hurricanes. And Carson Beck, good but not flawless by any stretch. And the Notre Dame secondary has a couple absolute studs, potential All-Americans in coverage there, that I think are going to make it difficult for him to have too big a night. So I'm rolling with the Irish. All right, TCU, North Carolina, Monday night, ESPN, Frogs giving 3. Brian, where are you going?
Give me the Frogs. You know, I think, you know, talking to Sonny Dykes this offseason, he recognized that, you know, there were some issues in terms of that game preparation leading up to that game against Colorado a couple of years ago when they played Deion Sanders. They've made some changes internally. I think that's going to pay off in this game. Josh Hoover is going to have a big one at quarterback. There was a reason why, you know, Tennessee, a couple others kind of dabbled in trying to lure him away from Fort Worth there. I think TCU makes a big statement in opening weekend.
I'm going to take the Sunny over the hoodie. And I'm going to lay the points. I think TCU is sneaky good this year. They got a tough schedule, but I think they're a sneaky good team. I think they beat Carolina.
They could be pretty explosive. Josh Hoover is a good quarterback there, but man, I'm rolling with Belichick. Giving him 9 months or whatever to prepare for this opener. I don't think there's any way he comes out with an unprepared team. I think they will have TCU scouted to the fullest extent they can, and they'll have some schematic wrinkles. And I'm hoping that Jordan Hudson stays the heck out of it, and we just watch the game. We'll see. Dare to dream there. All right, one lock of the week, guys. You got to pick one game, your choice. Tell me what you got and who you're going with. Who's got one?
I'll go first. Virginia Tech is getting 8 points against Sir Big Spur. And I'm going to take those points. I think Virginia Tech is an improved team. I think they're going to play this game with desperation. They're going to play it for their head coach. And I think that South Carolina, while still a very good program and has a lot of good players on that roster, and I love Shane Beamer and all that, I just think that the 8 points is too much to turn down.
I'd rather go with the under in that game, given the two defenses involved. I will go with Utah giving 6.5 at UCLA. Utes have won 3 of their last 4 against the Bruins there in the Rose Bowl, and this is the 380th game for Kyle Whittingham at Utah. Give me Utah. I think they make a big statement. I know there's a lot of emphasis on Nico taking over that offense for UCLA, but I think the Utes are ultimately the offense that raises some eyebrows and gets it done there in Pasadena.
All right, I'm going to go Thursday night game in Kansas City, Nebraska giving 6.5 to Cincinnati. I'm going with the Cornhuskers here. This is a home game for Nebraska. They have 1 million fans in Kansas City. Cincinnati, this game was originally going to be in Nippert Stadium. Great home game for them. And then they got talked into moving it to Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium. And then now they waved a little more money at them and moved it to a virtual Nebraska home game. So I think the Cornhuskers are set up to take another step forward this season. And they're going to start by covering the 6.5. I like that half point there. Give me the Cornhuskers there. All right, that's our show. Thank you all for listening. Please subscribe. Leave us nice reviews if you feel so moved. Try not to at least say anything hateful about us. We'll try to get better again next week.
We will. Restaurants.
Others receiving votes. We'll be back again. Enjoy the weekend, everybody.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.